Stupidity has been presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Welcome to a journey inside the soul of one of sports media's brightest minds. A profoundly nuanced odyssey called Stupidity. Hosted by the incomparable Stu Gatz, a man I consider a personal hero, an icon of the industry. I want to make no bones about it. There is no Mike Greenberg today without the sensational Stu Gatz providing me the inspiration to chase my dream and challenge myself to be just half as brilliant as he is. Allow me, Mike Greenberg, a man who would probably today be doing traffic in Sioux Falls without Stu Gatz's influence, to welcome you to a truly transcendent sonic experience. This is Stupidity.
All right, welcome into another episode of Stupidity, the biggest podcast in the world. Please subscribe, rate, and review. That word I just tried to say was subscribe. Subscribe, rate, and review, then unsubscribe, resubscribe, re-rate, re-review. Do all that fun stuff for me. Do it for our guests today, C.J. McCollum and Bill Walton. Very excited for both of these. Stanzik, we have C.J. McCollum coming on here. He has his own podcast. Who doesn't, by the way?
Right.
It's big. It's not as big as this one because this one's the biggest in the world. I'm excited for this, but first I have to ask you the same question I ask you every f***ing week. What episode is this?
You serious?
Yes, I am. I'm tired, man.
It's episode 18.
All right. We've done 18 of these things, or 17, and now an 18th?
That's correct.
Holy shit, man. I never, pounded the under.
Serious question. What do you think you would set the over under at going forward? If it was like, all right, this podcast will last X amount of episodes, what would you put the over under at?
I would have said, if I were getting paid, I would have said it goes on forever. I'm not getting paid. I would have set the over under at 10.
No. So like knowing what you know now, you're resetting the line right now. So you've done 17. This will be 18. What's the total number before we stop doing it, if you had to set the line right now?
Oh, I see. So you want, like, total number or how many more? So, like, 25 is where I would set it from now.
So 25 in addition to the 18, or is
25? No, 25 so total. So, yeah, we got seven more here until someone starts f***ing banging me.
Okay? I mean, the summer is upon us here, and a lot of vacations coming up, I imagine.
Listen, I love Lebatard. I love everyone. I love our sales staff. I love our bosses at ESPN. If they think I'm doing more than 25 of these without collecting a penny, they're out of their f***ing minds. I mean, Abby left 10 f***ing episodes ago.
She's smarter than you.
She got a f***ing $25 gift card from
That's all she needed.
It's unbelievable. Take out of there. I don't want to say their name because they won't spend money with us. They just want free promotion. Get them the hell out of here. Stupidity. All right, so I'm really excited for this. C.J. McCollum, I mean, Stanzik, just he's an interesting dude. He's into journalism. He has his own podcast. He's also a pretty good basketball player. So this should be pretty fun, right?
Yeah, he is actually really interested in journalism. He's going to be in the media once his career ends. I mean, he's still in his 20s, so he's got plenty of career left. But quite frankly, I think he's a better journalist than you are.
There's no question about it. I'm not a journalist, so he is definitely better than I am. That's
You know what's funny? Years ago, back on Mike and Mike, Adnan, our guy, was filling in, and him and Hembo, you remember Hembo, the researcher, who's now the researcher for GetUp.
Yeah.
Adnan and Hembo had this argument about whether or not Greeny, who just voiced the open, is a journalist. I mean, he used to be a journalist, but he is no longer a journalist, correct?
Yeah, he's a talk show host. Like, Lebatard used to be a journalist, and I mean, he'll be the first one to say he traded all that in for the circus. Like, no, he's not a journalist anymore. Greeny's not a journalist anymore. Listen, once you cross over and you start doing sports radio, you have ceased to be a journalist, okay?
Yeah, like, but that's I think a lot of these former journalists like holding on to that journalist credibility. Like, I don't think Greeny would be so willing to say, I am no longer a journalist. Like, Wilbon's out there still pretending he's a journalist, but is he still writing columns for the Washington Post? I don't know if he is.
I don't think it's about whether you're writing columns or not, or whether you get into sports radio or not, or whether you start a show PTI with your friend Tony Kornheiser or not. I think when you cease to become a journalist is when you go on SportsCenter with a Cubs hat and a f***ing Cubs jersey on. How about that? Stupidity! All right, let's bring on a guy who, as Stanzik said perfectly before, is by far a better journalist and a better radio host than I am.
Stupidity!
What got you interested in the media? Why have you kind of chosen to go down this path? You have your own podcast, Pull Up Podcast, at Twitter, at CJ McCollum. What interested you about being in the media, sports journalism, journalism in general?
Yeah, I actually started off in the business school in college, and it's way too much math. So I began thinking of different ways to be successful in college while utilizing some skills that I thought would be beneficial for my post-college career, which is, you know, having to speak to media, having to engage in media-like activities, and really kind of understanding how to convey a certain type of message. So that was, you know, basically why I ended up switching over to journalism, and I began to like it. I had more fun writing 30-page papers than I did studying for exams, and that stuff came more naturally and more easy to me. And as I continued to work and intern for Lehigh Sports and do those type of things, I gravitated towards it. And then I began doing radio, you know, Sirius XM radio and different radio outlets, and then parlaying it into a podcast. Now it's just been fun because you get to control your own message. I think that's the biggest thing. Really just show fans and listeners a different side of you. So that's one of the things we try to do on the podcast, is obviously dissect the game, pick the game apart from someone who's playing it every day and playing against certain players. And then, you know, being able to have engaging conversations with players who will be more so willing to open up because it's a colleague and someone who's been through what you've been through. And that's why I think it's been successful.
That's a great point, because you don't need – so if Skip Bayless – and I don't pick him randomly, like you just had a beef with Skip Bayless, okay, on Twitter – but if he comes out and says something about you or your team that you find is inaccurate, then you now have the power to go on your own podcast and set the record straight and say it the way you want it to be said and say it the way you want it to be represented. And I think that's pretty powerful. Like, I love what the Players Tribune is doing. I love what you're doing with your own podcast. I like that players are taking control of the messaging. Now, listen, it sucks for me as a media member, because the more of you guys that start doing this, the less important we become. But I'm cool with that. Like, I think it's a really cool and unique way for you guys to get out there, whatever it is that you want to get out there, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And have it be accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The accuracy of it. Right. Because a lot of times it's the headlines, and, you know, the producers of my podcast, they've done a great job, but sometimes the headline is what gravitates you, right? I can say something, and maybe it's a 30-second clip, but you only clip 15 seconds of it, and I don't get to really explain exactly why I said what I said. Or it's just the headline, and it's either thinks Kawhi is playing like LeBron or playing like Jordan, and then I don't get to explain why I said he's comparable to Jordan. You know what I mean?
So yes, you get
I
to
think
expand
at times
there,
it's
yeah.
hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just clip it how you want it, and then boom, you get the clicks.
CJ McCollum with us. His podcast, Pull Up Podcast, is available on iTunes, wherever you download your podcast. Please go check it out. It's phenomenal. Here's the other thing that pissed me off. I got to be honest with you. Because you have your own podcast. Now, Damian Lillard has been coming on our show for years, and I asked him to come on right after he hit that big shot, the shot. And I was told no by Jim Taylor, your great media relations guy, whom I love, by the way. I was told no by Taylor because he was going on CJ McCollum's podcast the next day. So I gotta be honest with you, I was pissed off at you because we weren't getting Damian on. And why the f*** would Damian come on with me when he can come on with one of his best friends, CJ McCollum?
Yeah, I apologize for that, man. I didn't even want to ask him to come on because I knew how emotionally draining the game was and how tired I was physically.
Right.
So I didn't even want to ask him to come on, but I was like, bro, I gotta record a podcast. So you got 10 or 15 minutes, just call in. And we were both at our homes on the couch watching the game, and we just, you know, talk like 25-30 minutes, and he's a good dude. But the shot was unbelievable. You know, that's something that'll live, you know, forever. One of the greatest shots in playoff history.
What was your favorite part of that shot? Was it Seth Curry? Because I love that. Like, Dan and I on our show, on the Lebatard show, we have played that back so many times. I love Damian, of course, waving goodbye, season's over, as they're walking off the court. I love Seth Curry's reaction. Before the ball even went in, I believe Seth told him, your season's over. He's going to take it from there, and he's going to hit it, and your season's over. Put us in CJ McCollum's head as that whole thing kind of went down, and what was your favorite part of it, besides it going in?
Yeah. the Seth Curry stuff was amazing, and I didn't even notice until afterwards when I was watching the replay, and Seth was like, yeah, I was talking shit the whole time. He was just on top of the key, and I just started laughing like, you are crazy. And then I watched the video, and he actually was, you know, talking the whole time, and I think the craziest part of it all is how I'm in the right corner, and I'm looking at him, and Dame is just kind of sizing up and dribbling. There's 7 seconds left, and I'm screaming like, "Go, go! Like, attack! Like, what is you doing, bro? Like, do something!" And he just calmly just dribbles, and he's still like 40 feet away. He takes like a dribble towards him and backs him up and sidesteps and bang from 40 feet. And it was just like the ball traveled in slow motion. I think it was in the air for like 3 seconds. And he's just watching the ball in the air. And I'm like, oh, shit. Like, that's got a chance. And then the angle is just perfect. I'm like, oh, that's it. And he hits it, and then you kind of like pause, like, what happened? Oh, we won. Chase him down. It was just crazy.
I'm watching you right now. I'm actually watching the video right now. I'm watching you. And I am now seeing you for the first time begging Damian to do something with the ball. And Damian's got to cover the whole time. But this is the first time I'm seeing you tell Damian, hey, what are you going to do? Do something. Let's go. It's laugh out loud.
Yeah,
funny.
I'm screaming at him and like moving my arm like, go. Like, what are you doing?
And he's got it all under control the entire time.
Right. He had his mind made up. I'm raising.
I want to get to all the great stuff you're doing because you're going to China and you got your podcast. You do a bunch of great work with kids. And I will get to all that in just a second. But I do want to talk to you. Airplane etiquette. You tweeted last month about riding like Stanton. Can help me out with this, okay? Because you're into airport etiquette here. Riding in C20, like your fave Instagram thought, on this airplane. Tried to go to the bathroom in first class. Flight attendant reminded me 'twas for premium first class passengers only and blocked the door. Back to the ghetto I went. Line was long as hell. Humble yourself. Airplane lands at the same time. Stanzik, is CJ McCollum right about this? Should he be able to go up to first class? Why he isn't in first class or on a private jet in the first place is beyond me. But Stanzik, should CJ McCollum in the back of the plane be able to go up and use the first class bathroom? I say yes.
My inclination would be yes, but I think if we let one person in row 20, then what's to stop every single person from using that bathroom?
Yeah, but I think CJ
minds. I agree. Right. I wasn't really upset about him blocking the door. Like, I was upset that there was a line in the back of the plane that I had to wait in for 10 minutes to use the bathroom. I was like, geez. And I normally would fly first class, but I'm a last-minute type of person, and I needed to get to New York in a hurry. And it was the only seat. It was that or a middle seat. So I took the exit row in the corner. You know, it was a good $372 well spent.
That a boy. Did anyone recognize you on that plane?
Yes, absolutely. It was actually like a team. Right. And I think it was a girls' basketball across one of those types of teams traveling. There was a lot of passengers who recognized me. I think they were kind of confused, like, why is he –
why are you sitting in the 20th row, man? What are you doing back here?
Why is he in zone 3 for boarding?
Now, if you're in first class and someone comes up from row 20 to use your bathroom, I'm certain you're okay with that. Of course you are.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, as long as it's not like a crazy deuce being dropped and it's going to just change the way it smells in front, I don't mind it.
Right, that's problematic, Stanzik, if a deuce is dropped.
Yeah, that could be problematic if it's a five-hour flight. That could change things.
Who on your team or who have you played with that is most likely just to tear up an airplane bathroom?
A like, crazy who, deuce?
Yeah, a crazy deuce in an airplane bathroom.
I'm going
bathroom.
Nurkic
honestly,
or Cantor.
Who are you going with? Hold on.
I got Nurkic or Cantor for sure.
Oh, Edis Cantor or Nurkic.
Hilarious.
Those are two good ones. Yes.
That is hilarious.
All right, wait, before you give your answer, I was going to go. I want to say Jake Lehman, but I think Jake's too good, or Myers Leonard, but both those guys are too pretty to do that, if you know what I mean.
Honestly, that's a great. I don't really know who would do it, but somebody did do it one of our last flights because it was unbelievable in there. I couldn't believe it. Uh-huh. It might have been Scal. I think I blame Scal because he was the one that went in the bathroom before me. He says that someone did it before him, but I'm not sure. It might have been Scal, but honestly, I don't. Anyone is equally capable of doing serious damage to the bathroom, honestly. It could be one of 15 guys.
Okay, so you've done it, is what you're saying, CJ.
No, I haven't on the plane. I have a routine. Before it's time to leave, you got to do what you got to do in the hotel or at home.
Wait, so how do you get to that? Like, what if you can't? So take me through that routine if you get real quick. What a ridiculous
so,
question.
I mean, historically, like if I'm in the airport, I will use the bathroom in the airport before we take off. And if I'm flying, we're flying private with a team, you just use the bathroom before you leave the arena or before you leave your home. And you're talking about 6 years now. I mean, I definitely did it this season for sure. Out of six seasons, maybe twice. But I don't even think I have, honestly, because I have it down to a science. I pre-wrap the toilet perfectly if it's in the airport. You know what I'm saying? You got to I always say, I used to take a picture of the rap job and say trust issues and play Drake's song as a rap in the That's probably too much information for the listeners.
No, it's not. No, there's never enough information. I regret actually talking basketball with you. I only want to talk about number twos and airplane etiquette. That's it. This is tremendous. What else, Stantic? Ask him. You have airplane etiquette questions. Ask. We have an expert on the line right now.
Yeah, CJ, I got to know what people are doing as soon as the airplane lands, it taxis, the seatbelt sign goes off. Why is everybody standing up in the hallway right away? I don't get it.
Oh, that's so bothersome.
I never understood that. I never understood it, and people constantly do it. You stand up and look at each other as if you can just run through everyone and get off the plane when you know you can't. You have to taxi for a little bit anyway, regardless. So it's a nightmare for me to see that, honestly. It's funny to see how intelligent, but unintelligent we are as a human race.
All right, so help me out here. If you're in the middle seat, who gets, does the middle seat have, are they entitled to both armrests? How does that work for you?
No. No, I'm undefeated. I've never lost an armrest fight, besides my fiance. Right. I don't lose the armrest fight, regardless of where I sit. I usually play the push and tug game where, like, if you beat me to it, like, I'll slowly just, like, work you off. Like, I slowly just try to move your arm. So, very rarely do you get a competitive armrest. Person next to you who's going to fight back. You know, usually just kind of like, all right, it's yours. You can have it, whatever.
Right. So you go into that, like you eye your seat, like row 20, when you eyed your seat and you eye that armrest, and you're like, that armrest is mine, right?
Yeah, the young lady next to me is my friend. Standard chance. Sized her up and said, oh, yeah. I've historically won. My brother does it. My brother flies. He plays in Europe. He always sends me a Snapchat video of him stealing the armrest from someone, and we laugh about it because I think we're the only ones who seriously, everybody else is just like, whatever. But we take it seriously, and historically we do it. Now our friends in the group chat, they're recording video of them stealing the armrest from passengers, Eric's and CJ style.
All right, I'm going to have you and your brother back. I want to talk about this. I'm going to have you all together. But why would he come on this one when he could come on your podcast? That was my point earlier. No, we'll figure it out.
No, he'll come on your podcast. He has
All right, we'll do it together, man. Santa, you have more airline?
Yeah, I got one more, and I can't believe I didn't start with this one.
I have one as well, but I'll let you go first.
Stu, it better be the same one.
Okay.
CJ, you're taller than both of us. Stu's like 5'7". I'm 5'11", 3/4", not quite 6 feet. Don't worry about it. Why do people recline? I hate all of them. It should be banned.
I'm a recliner, man.
Oh, CJ, I'm going to hang up on you right now.
Yes!
Get out of here.
Yes!
Why do you recline? It's so insensitive.
I pay for the seat. All you have to do is, in order to...
It's like a game of dominoes now.
Not be bothered by the recline. You have to recline yourself.
That's it.
But I feel bad about the person behind me.
Yeah, but everyone has the option, stands it, to recline. So what CJ is saying, and he's right, is if you recline, then the person behind you has to recline.
But then it's like everyone's just doing it because the person in front of them is. CJ, let me ask you this. Before you recline, do you turn around and look at the person and make sure they're not enormous and you wouldn't be crushing their knees, or do you just do it blindly?
Honestly, man, if I pay for my seat, I'm using whatever accessories and benefits my seat offers.
Oh, CJ, you're a monster.
That includes the light. I have no problem turning the light on as well. If I want to read, and
I'm good with
seat,
that.
I'm turning the light on.
That a boy.
You know?
Yep.
I don't think there's any, I'm not jamming back into your knees. You know what I mean? I'll ease back, and as you feel the seat coming back, if you're a smart human, you will do what's necessary to protect those knees as you see the chairs slowly coming back. And I've been hit. I understand what it's like. You know what I mean? You just got to be ready. Your head's got to be on the swivel at all times. Got to be prepared to move those knees. But, yeah, especially on this flight to China, I'm going to be in my pod, knocked out. And occasionally I'll walk around and stretch because you got to keep the blood flowing after, you know, every 2 hours or whatever it is to make sure that and everything's flowing the way it's supposed to.
Might have to drop a deuce on that flight.
Definitely not dropping a deuce. I can guarantee
you. How long is
the flight
to China?
I've done multiple flights to China and Europe, no deuce.
How long are these flights? That seems impossible. Seriously, it's not healthy.
I'm going to fly from New York to Beijing, Shanghai, or somewhere like that.
Right.
It'll probably be, I don't know, 10, 11. It's just like a night's sleep. Do you have to drop a deuce in your 8-hour sleep cycle or whatever?
As soon as I wake up, I'm going right to the toilet, though.
Right, that's the problem.
Yeah, but you have to change your pattern. When you know you have a flight, I'm taking a morning flight out, so it's perfect. I can drop my deuce. Right. And then I can, you know, go about my day and get to the airport and fly out at 10, 11 a.m. It's perfect. By the time I land, you know, 11 hours later, it's time for the next one.
I mean, few things have made me happier than you talking about dropping deuces. I'm serious. In my entire life, I mean, I am a grown man with two children, a wife, I'm married, I got a great job, I work for ESPN. This is the happiest I've ever been.
Honestly, dropping deuces makes the world a better place.
You're 100% right.
I mean, it's the ultimate equalizer. Everybody does it.
Right. The day doesn't start until you drop a deuce. I mean, that's it. That's
all right. I have a question for you guys now.
All right, go ahead. Perfect. I love this.
So you guys have asked me about how hard it is for me to not drop a deuce on the plane. So you guys are plain deuce droppers.
No.
Basically, that's what I'm getting at this conversation.
No, I am, when I have to go, when I got to go, I got to go dropper. That's what I am. Like, if it's on
when
a plane.
You got to go, you got to go dropper. Do you travel with baby wipes?
I do. Baby wipes have changed my life. Yes, I do.
Yes. Okay. I have an unbelievable amount of respect for you now because of that, because I had some teammates who've never used baby wipes,
right,
and I judged them. I was like, you can't live life like this. You travel way too much. The things you're eating and the amount of protein you're taking in, I can only imagine what you're doing to your draws.
Stantic, have you used baby wipes yet? I'm telling you, we'll change your life.
So not baby wipes, but a company that used to sponsor some radio shows, Dollar Shave Club, which you know well, Stu, they make one wipe Charlie's.
Yes.
Game changers.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I got like four different flavors. I think flavor is probably the wrong word.
Right, it is.
But sometimes there's a little tingling sensation.
CJ,
sense. Yeah, thank you, sense. Thanks.
Yeah, you're eating them? What are you doing?
I told you it was the wrong word.
Wait, CJ, I'm going to send you some. Have you tried these, Dollar Shave Club, One Wipe Charlie's?
I haven't, but I'm never against it. I'm never against a good wipe.
All right, Stantic, I want you – never against a good wipe. I love you, man. Stantic, I want you to get his address anywhere we can send these, okay? And I'm going to send them One Wipe Charlie's from.
He's going to be begging for them in China.
Yes, he will be.
Oh, you know I'm packing up wipes. I'm going to get some this week.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right, we got to get him One Wipe Charlie's, Stantic, okay?
Okay.
Speaking of wiping, speaking of deuces, you're a Browns fan, huh?
I am.
CJ, that is a professional segue right there, my man.
We went 7 games last year, man. We've evolved.
Yes, you have. Are you excited about this season?
Honestly, I'm really excited. I'm locking in my tickets now, as I always do around this time of year. So I'll be going to about 3 or 4 games, and just the versatility we've been able to add to the roster, the experience we'll have now, Baker getting a full summer in, you know, with the coaching staff, offensive coordinator, being able to kind of know he's number one from the beginning. So it's going to be a good season for everybody.
Yeah, it's a weird world, though, where, like, you know, everyone's, like, expecting big things out of the Browns. Like, that's, I mean, you haven't lived in a world like that, have you? Like, everyone's, like, people are picking
crazy.
Them to go to the Super Bowl. It's nuts, right?
I never thought I'd see this day where our over-under is like 9.5 games. What?
I'm a Jets fan. Listen, I'm living the same life. I'm a Jets fan, man. So yeah, same with me. Like, I'll just, like, little small victories like that where the over-under is like 8. I'm like, what? My team?
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, honestly. When you go through the struggle, you just appreciate success that much more. And
yes.
I look forward to getting more bandwagon fans. You know, hopefully we can make like a warrior-like transition to the NFL where we just take over and everybody becomes a fan of us.
What are you saying? Those people weren't warrior fans before all this happened?
No, I'm saying there's a
no,
lot
because,
of...
Because if you don't want to say it, I'll say it for you. They weren't. But anyway, go ahead.
There's a lot of fans who were warrior fans from the beginning, like pre-Monte, you know, era. And there's a lot of fans that jumped on. But that's what happens when you become a dynasty. People jump on.
Yep.
So kudos to them for putting on a good brand of basketball.
Including Kevin Durant.
Y'all are sick, man. That's my guy, man. Y'all are sick.
I know. I'm just teasing, man. It was an alley-oop. You threw it up there for me. I just slammed it home. CJ, just quickly, because I want you to promote this stuff. You're going to China for what? What are you going to China for?
I'm going to China for Li Ning, the brand. We have a tour set up with them every summer. I'll also be doing some stuff with a camp, you know, out there as well, June 20 to 23rd, a camp that's actually putting together for kids, and we're also putting an app together where I'll do some instructional stuff, and they'll be able to purchase the app. It'll be available to, you know, anyone.
All right, awesome. And real quick, CJ's press pass, anything you want to tell us about that? You do great work with students and journalism. That's pretty awesome.
Yes. CJ's Press Pass is a young journalism mentorship program that we put together a few years ago. Where basically, you know, we reach out to young journalists who are interested in learning more about the field, We allow them to be educated on it and cover games and just basically put them in a position to get paid to write stories, get paid to do articles, and learn everything there is to know about journalism and, you know, make an educated decision upon whether or not they'd like to explore that avenue.
Any lessons for me there that I can learn?
No, but I'm sure the kids would love to, you know, hear from you guys and just learn more about what it's like to work for ESPN and kind of like what your career path has been like up to this point.
I would love to do that for you and with you. I'm being dead serious here, so that would be a great opportunity, and we'll get in touch with you about that in ways that we could help. All right, we'll get you out of here. Anything about the podcast? When does a new episode drop? Anything you want to tell the audience here about the podcast? Check it out, the Pull Up Podcast with CJ McCollum.
Yeah, I would just say subscribe, listen, and if you don't want to listen, just play it while you're asleep at night so you can get the streams anyway.
I always tell them to do, CJ? I always tell them to subscribe, and listening is optional. Subscribe, unsubscribe, rate, and review. I don't care if you listen. Just make sure you're rating, reviewing, subscribing, unsubscribing.
Exactly. New pod will be out every week. We got Gary Vee coming on in the next couple of weeks as well, so it'll be cool.
Awesome. All right, man. Feel free to ask me on that podcast whenever you want, okay?
All right, sounds good. I'll send you an invitation through the mail.
Stupidity!
Stanzik, CJ McCollum. That was everything we expected it to be, right? He was fantastic, man.
Yeah, a little serious stuff on the basketball, a little goofing around with the playing stuff, the poop stuff. I mean, that's pretty ideal for us.
I regret the basketball stuff. I only wanted to talk about pooping and planes with him.
I know. We should do that going forward. Just go right to the stupidness. I mean, the podcast is called Stupidity. There's a picture of you on the toilet. We should start every interview with like a which way do you wipe question.
You're 100% right. Speaking of shitting, Stanzik, I am in coach right now in my house. I'm in a tiny little office, okay? And we got Bill Walton coming up, and I need to get prepared for that interview. So do me a favor, throw in a couple of commercials here, because I am going to leave coach here. I'm going to go outside of my office, go find my throne in my house. I'm going to invade first class and leave a deuce. How about that? Stupidity! All right, I want to take a quick time out from Stupidity, tell you guys about ZipRecruiter. Finding a new job is a lot of work. It doesn't need to be. What if you had your own personal recruiter to help you find a better job? Now ZipRecruiter's technology could do that for you. Just download the ZipRecruiter job search app. Let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, and its technology starts doing the work. The ZipRecruiter app finds jobs you'll like and puts your profile in front of employers who may be looking for someone like you. How about that? If an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know. So if you're interested in the job, you can apply. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated job search app, period, end of discussion. They are number one. There is no debate. And based on a third-party survey, 7 out of 10 people who found a new job on ZipRecruiter increased their salaries. How about that? These were the results of a 2017 U.S. survey of over 500 ZipRecruiter users who got hired for a job they found on ZipRecruiter. My listeners should download the free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Don't wait. The sooner you download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner it can help you find a better job. Go get a job. Go to ZipRecruiter.com today and make sure you download the ZipRecruiter job search app. Do it today. Stanzik, you know what time it is?
Yeah.
It's TISO time.
TISO is the official watch of the NBA. Each one of TISO's timepieces delivers quality performance and traditional luxury. This graduation season, get the NBA fan in your life a TISO watch. The TISO Chrono XL is a great watch for those looking for a sporty chronograph with Swiss technology at an unbeatable price. Shop now at us.tisoshop.com and buy a watch today for the NBA fan in your life. Stupidity! Welcome back to Stupidity, the biggest podcast in the world. You guys know if you listen to our show and this podcast, you know I am obsessed with the Grateful Dead, which is now Dead & Company, Bill Walton. I think the world's most famous Deadhead is going to join us. He's on tour right now with the Grateful Dead. There was a great shot of Bill Walton. Stanzik, you sent me a shot of Walton in the pit from a couple of nights ago, right?
Yeah, he's obviously the tallest guy in the crowd. He's got his hands up. He's kind of like shaking his hands a little bit. He is loving the moment.
All right, so if you had to guess, because I'm telling you, when you're in the midst of a Grateful Dead tour, and that's what Bill Walton is in right now, like he saw two shows at Shoreline Amphitheater out in California. He went to two shows at the Hollywood Bowl in L.A. That was the last couple of nights. He's headed up. They have a night off tonight. He's headed up to Washington to go check out a couple of more shows at the Gorge up in Washington. He is having the time of his life. And what I'm telling you, Stanzik, is there's a good chance that Bill Walton might be on LSD right now. So I want to just ask you, if you had to bet, gun to your head, do you think Bill Walton's going to do this interview while on acid with us?
Yes.
So wait, you think he's going to do this interview on acid? Is that what you're saying?
Gun to my head, yes.
All right, so Stanzik, a yes. I'm a no. I'm thinking that he is going to, whatever he's going to take, whatever form he's going to take it in, mushrooms, LSD, tabs of acid, I sound way too experienced on this front. Whatever it is that he's going to take, I say he takes it the moment we're done with this interview on his drive to the Gorge. Wife driving, of course.
Stupidity!
I don't think I've ever been as excited to speak to someone than I am to our next guest.
Don't ease me in. I've been all night long coming home. Don't ease me in. Oh, my gosh. What a tour. What a show. California, preaching on the burning shore. California, knocking on the golden door. Bertha, don't you come around here anymore. Stugatz, great to be with you on this most incredible and remarkable day.
It really is.
Shining, it's all out. The black-throated wind has disappeared, and we are having the time of our life here. The Dead & Company tour, but I'm just going to call it, for formal sakes, I'm just going to call it the Grateful Dead, because that's what it is, and it's been such a remarkable, spectacular, phenomenal, incredible. You list off all of the superlatives, but they're not really superlatives because they're all understating what's going on out here. And there's only 16 shows left in the tour. I cannot believe it. Started in Shoreline on Friday, and then it stayed there for 2 days, and then day of transition to get down here to Los Angeles. We're right in the heart of it all in Hollywood, the Walk of Fame. I was standing out there yesterday. Chick Hearn, Dick Enberg, Ralph Lawler, all the guys who have just meant so much to me in my entire life. And wow, what a remarkable happening here. And just to see how joyful, to see how uplifting, to hear the sounds, to be the crowd, the Hollywood Bowl, Shoreline. Stugatz, where have you been? I've been looking for you. Oh my gosh. I've been saving a ticket. You got to get out here, man.
Oh, Bill, I want to come to a show with you desperately. I'm so upset. I'm so busy coaching my daughter's lacrosse team that I haven't had time to go to a show yet.
But in the family, they've all brought their wives, and all their children are here. And it's absolutely spectacular.
Oh, you're killing me. And listen, nothing would bring me more delight than seeing a show with Bill Walton. Don't Ease Me In was the first set closer last night, so I love how you started this interview. That was fantastic.
Concert tour started with playing in the band.
Yeah, I know. It was great.
Just absolutely incredible. And then we kind of forgot about that. And then they came back at the very end of the show.
I know.
The set lists have been absolutely over the top.
They've been amazing.
It's very much like Fare Thee Well. And to see what Matt Bush and Bob Weir and John Mayer and O'Teal and Jeff Comenti and Bill Kreutzmann and Mickey Hart are all doing is just absolutely over the top. And literally indescribable. You have to be there. Because when they come out, the crowd, if you're not there 3 hours in advance of the showtime, you're like so late, it's incredible. And everybody on Shakedown Street has just been superlative. And all the different merchandise out there, and what Dieter and Murray and Alex have all done there with the new merchandise, and the sweatshirt, the purple sweatshirt with the lightning bolt right on the chest, and then Dead & Company Summer Tour 2019, absolutely remarkable. And then they come in and they play, for 3 hours, 45 minutes of just absolutely perfection out there with the talent that they have. And let's just start with what Bob Weir is doing, because Bob is in incredible shape, and his voice sounds so phenomenal. And one of the things that makes me so proud and happy on this tour, I've been going for 52 years, Stugatz, is that the way that they're all interacting with each other. And they're happy, they're smiling, they're jumping up and down, they're looking forward to being out there. When they're not on stage, they're spending time together. They're telling stories. They're laughing. And Jay Blakesford and Bob Minikin is taking all the pictures. And it's just absolutely incredible. Bill Kreutzmann is just driving it, man. his snap to get him back to find the one again is just so powerful. Because one of the things that I love so much, don't ease about the Grateful Dead, is that you're encouraged to get lost.
Yes.
And when you're out there and everybody is just going in different directions, including the band, mm-hmm. and then there's that one guy, Bill Kreutzmann, who can just snap it and then everybody's right back onto the beat, onto the rhythm, because it takes all you've got just to stay on that beat. And then Mickey Hart, wow, what a creative genius. And he is just filling in everything back there, and the ability to keep the culture and the spirit and the creativity and the imagination alive.
Hey, it's Sarah Spain, the commish. If you're wondering what the f*** is happening right now, so is Stu. Now back to Bill.
And then Jeff Clementi, who is as great a piano player as I have ever seen. I mean, he's up there with like Van Cliburn, and his ability to just touch all the keys and bring it all, fill in all the holes in the sound. O'Teal, what he's been doing on the bass over there, his willingness to be that team player, because the guys who fill in and help push the Stars, I mean, it's very much like being part of a great basketball team, and how this all coincides with the NBA Finals going on right now is just absolutely tremendous. And O'Teal has taken now to having his wife, Jess, and their young child, Nigel, is on the tour, too. He's just a little baby. But Jess has been painting the African face paint all over O'Teal's face, and it's just absolutely spectacular. I'm seriously considering getting in line for that option as well.
Bill, are you going to all the shows? Are you headed to the Gorge after this? Are you going to every show
on
this tour?
I'm going to the Gorge, oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, because no, my first show's...
I'm quickly looking at my calendar, because with only 16 left, I got to get to as many as I can.
All right, so I'm going to go. I'm telling you right now, I'll be at Saratoga, I'll be at Gillette, I'll be at City Field, okay. I'll be at...
I'm trying.
Listen, Colorado, you have to be there in Colorado, right? So I'm looking for a place where you and I are going to watch a dead show together.
4th of July, finale closer. Let's go. And I'm trying to get to as many as I can in between. Yes. But I got this thing called the job people, like you keep calling me all the time, and I'm trying to get to these shows. But we haven't talked about John Mayer. Yeah.
No.
What John Mayer is doing.
Well, Bill, hold on, because I want to ask you, because
Let me just talk about John Mayer first.
All right, go ahead. You talk about John Mayer, and then I'll ask you about John Mayer after you talk about John Mayer. Go ahead.
Okay. That's the great way. Let's go.
Yes. Yeah, just go in any direction.
I'm going to tell you how it's going to be. Oh, my gosh. So, first of all, they come in that second set after Don't Ease Me In, which closed out the first night at the Hollywood Bowl. They're coming in, and they open up with Ico, then go to New Speedway Boogie, Sugar Ray, and then they break into Help on the Way, Slipknot, and Franklin's Tower. And over, I mean, come on. It's better than perfect, you guys.
And so, Estella Blue out of space, Bill.
John Mayer, what he is doing is what everybody dreams for in life. And his clarity with that guitar, his power, his control, his leadership, his capability to put everything on the table out there. And as you know, a guy who did not grow up in this world, in this culture, and to be able to make that transition and to get to the level of unmatched excellence is just so inspirational. I am fired up, and it's just absolutely wonderful as to what's going on out there. And when you are in the pit out there, which I've been fortunate to be able to do in the first four shows, and you know, and you just feel it, and all those lyrics that they just keep coming at you, wash over you, bathe you in the warmth and the love, and you bask in the glow of happiness and fun and love and opportunity, the same things that brought me to this group 52 years ago in 1967. But what this group has been able to do, and they're partnering up with Filament Productions, the people that put on the light show and the visuals.
We interrupt this hijacking of stupidity to let you know that this answer is only about halfway done. Now back to Bill.
And help broadcast on the nugs.net, and all the different elements that go in that Filament does. I mean, you go into their production office, and it's like being at the NBA Finals in the ABC ESPN truck. Mm-hmm. You got Jonathan Singer, you got Rusty, one dead lead cameraman, you got Jonathan Healy, you got Ted, you got Ken, you got Josh back there, and there's just television screens everywhere. And they're mixing it and making it and creating it, and they put all these visuals in, and the amount of time, the wonders of nature, which they have been able to capture visually and to augment what the music is doing and the eagles flying, and then they're playing Franklin's Tower. When you get confused, listen to the music play, and then coming back out from the depths of the big screen, which, you know, takes hours and hours and hours every day to assemble as they move from site to site, and then they come out with this phenomenal visual of the bell with the big steel, your face etched into the bell, and then the bell is swinging back and forth into the music, and every night the visuals are totally different. I asked last night, do you guys ever sleep? Because you go to show after show, which is really the way to do it, and just get out there, get on tour. Remember, there's only 16 shows left. But to be able to see something new, something fresh, something imaginative and creative and relevant and authentic and current, and every single night we get there. And that doesn't happen because, you know, you got this incredible management team. You got Bernie and Craig and Eric. You got Jonathan Blaufarb out there. And then you got Chris and Rhea and Matt Bush and AJ and Nick. And you got Ken and you got Feely and then Red Tanner, who has to keep it all together with crazy people like me. Donies! I'm going to tell you how it's going to be. Please forget you knew my name. And then the encores. I mean, wow, Uncle John's band of the second night up in Shoreline. And then you got the Wait on the first night. And then two nights ago, the first night at Hollywood Bowl, Terrapin Station. Terrapin, I can't get enough. And the crowd just surging and pushing and just wow. And then it's over. And then it's over and you say, oh, my gosh. But then we all go out and have a great time all night, and we realize, okay, man, we got to get to this next one because there's only 16 left. And the Loose Lucy Lounge, the Club Front, all those enhanced hospitality options that the fans could get involved in. A remarkable security team, Danny, JK, Jason, Sinjin, Smudge, Sam, they're all making it happen. Frank, who's been there forever. All the wives, Carol, Natasha, Amy, Moe, Jess, this has been a dream come true.
Bill, here's the cool thing for me, because, and I love your passion, because, I mean, we're passionate. We love this band. It's the only band that I love, to be honest with you. But Dead & Company, it's been interesting, Bill, because you have, you know, some of the hardcore deadheads going back, and they're objecting to what it is that Dead & Company is doing. I think it's been fantastic. I think Mayer is as close to Jerry as you're going to get. But here's the cool thing about it, Bill, and I think you'll relate to this. For me, what was so cool about it is, A, I have the Dead and live Dead shows back in my life again, and then B, and far more importantly, my daughter has fallen in love with the Grateful Dead because of John Mayer. So I have now been able to share the experiences that I had as a kid, that you had as a kid, and I've been able to share those experiences with my daughter because Mayer hooked her in. And now I find my daughter, I walk into a room, Bill, she's not listening to Dead & Company. She's listening to the Grateful Dead, to Jerry, to Bob, you know, 1980s, Nassau Coliseum. She's listening to those shows now, Bill. So it's been a real joyful experience for me and my family.
It all rolls into one. Nothing comes for free. And rosters change. I'm a lifelong Celtic fan.
Right.
I enjoy today's roster as I love the rosters from Bill Russell and John Havlicek and Bob Cousy and Casey Jones, Sam Jones, all those guys. And as I watched the resurgence of the Portland Trailblazers and to be able to go to the game this year, game four, with the Warriors swept the Blazers with Bob Weir, and to have the all the members of the Blazer family still be there. I'm a UCLA alum and fan and passionate guy, and all that family is still all together. And to see that all happening with the Grateful Dead and how it keeps going on. And I've been listening to a remarkable version of Jerry and Merle Saunders from September 1st, 1974, at the Keystone Berkeley singing Going, Going, Gone. Oh, my gosh. I've just been having so much fun. Lori, my wife, what an angel of mercy, standing there in the shaft of light. Sometimes I'll put a song.
I drag my wife to these as well, Bill. I drag my wife to these as well.
Sometimes the songs stay on my automatic repeat for months on end, and that's one of them right there.
Bill, have you seen him in Mexico? Have you gone to that yet, playing in the sand?
The playing in the sand, I would love to go to that. But that's always right in the heart of the basketball season.
Right. Okay, so I've been to that with my daughter. Red's been very accommodating to me when I go there. I've been on stage. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's on the
So Bill, how about last night?
It's heaven. Bill, it's heaven.
They come out with estimated profit. California! Don't worry about me, no. And then they go right in the truck, and he's gone. St. Stephen, turn on your love light. Oh, my goodness. Stukas, how old are you? Are you 25 yet?
No, anyway, Bill, I'm 45 years old, Bill.
So when I was 8 years old and 9 years old, so much of my life was being formulated growing up in a non-athletic household. But I chose my heroes when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And Bill Russell, Muhammad Ali in the sports world. And then in the social and political world, I chose Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Sergeant Shriver. And then then when I became a teenager, I started having my musical heroes, including the Grateful Dead. And so as over the years, I've got to meet literally everybody who wasn't assassinated, mm-hmm. then to find out that all these people are better and nicer and kinder and more generous and more interesting than you could ever think or dream of as a young person. And that affirmation, how it all comes full circle. And, you think about Mr. Charlie. You think about the Big River. You think about the lost sailor into the same circumstances and the morning dew that they just blew it out with at the end of a shoreline the other night on the second night. And all these things.
Man, Stugatz must be loving this. He didn't even ask a question, and Walton is doing all of the work. Now back to Bill.
And then you're standing there last night, under the stars, Hollywood Bowl, an incalculable measured crowd that is just so ready for anything, and they come out on the drums. And Bob Weir delivers this most spectacular version of Standing on the Moon, and where everybody wants to just be jumping and running and exercising and stretching and doing it all, and then he just brings it, and with the power and with the clarity of his voice and with the emotion of his heart and his spirit and his soul. It's a lovely view from heaven, but I'd rather be with you. Talk is cheap, but vision true. I'm standing on the moon. Yes, there's nothing left to do, but I'd rather be with you. And then they went right into U.S. Blues. And what the Filament Productions guys did with U.S. Blues. And where do they come up with these ideas to put this stuff? And then they just have this gigantic screen right behind the stage, and it's arced with a big rainbow series of lights that Chris is working back there from the soundboard and the light station back there right behind the pit. And it's just like the most beautiful and incredible thing. You say, wow, what is that? How did they do that? Thank you, Filament Productions. Thank you, Ted. Thank you, Jonathan and Healy and Ted and Ken and Josh. Rusty, who just right in there getting all the shots, man. It is just the coolest thing ever. Oh, my gosh. Fire on the mountain. Yeah. The flame from the stage has moved to the floor.
This is a man who is smack in the middle of a dead tour. Yes. Bill, I want to ask you a couple of quick questions. I mean, I can listen to you all day. Just keep going and going. But I just want to ask you a couple of quick questions.
I got to get to the gorge, man. Come on.
I know. Just
shows left.
I know. Well, what show are we going to? That's what I want to know. I'm going to be at the two Boulder shows. I would love to see a show.
I'm going to be at Boulder.
All right. So I'm going to get your number, and we'll coordinate. And I would love to.
You got my number. We're on the phone already.
That's a very good point. I want to ask you a question because, listen, I'll take any dead show. It doesn't matter. But since you keep rattling off songs
about this guy, you know, about this group, yeah. And it's always been that way, in that they can take any venue. Everybody loves to go to the spectacular venues, whether sure. it be Red Rocks, whether it be the Gorge, whether it be these, you know, be beautiful places in Oregon, and the Hollywood Bowl, Shoreline.
Alpine Valley. Yeah.
This band, Alpine Valley, don't leave out Wrigley Field. So oh, I was so in Wrigley cool. Field the last time they played yeah. there. Mm. Oh, my gosh. I mean, so that crowd in Wrigley, you know, I was there at Fare Thee Well when they set all the records, and that was just over the top. And then they come back a couple years later, and they play at Wrigley. And I was there because, you know, in these big stadium shows, you kind of have to get out early or you're going to be there until and you're going to miss the next show. And so I was up on the stage. And on the stage, you can't see anything and you can't hear anything. Other than that, everything's fine. But so I like, you know, I have to be out in the crowd. I mean, that's it. I'm a fan. I got to be out in the crowd with all my friends, and all those people out there are my friends.
You got to feel the energy, and, Bill. You have to feel the energy. Yes.
And so I get up on stage during the momentary break between the last song and then the encore song, and then they start playing the encore, and they bring the lights up in Wrigley Field, and then the fans. There was not. I mean, this is a massive stadium, Wrigley Field, and I'm looking, and all the lights are on, and there is not 1 inch of space that is not filled by humanity. And these people in Chicago, man, they are driving this band, and the band, they're looking around, they're trying to get off the stage, but the fans won't let them, and so they just keep looking at each other and smiling and nodding, and they come up with another song, and then another song, and they just keep going and going and going. So do whatever you can to get to Wrigley, because there's only 16 shows left on this tour, and we just only hope that the tours will continue. Oh my gosh.
I can't believe it's back
in
my life.
Cassidy last night.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Unbelievable.
The pace that they're playing that song at. It's just absolutely wonderful. And then.
Bill, you leave it out. He's gone. St. Stephen. I mean, you got some show last night. My God. Brown Eyed Woman,
Shoreline,
Ramble on Rose, first set.
In the second set of the second night, when they China Cat, I Know You Rider, and then Road Jimmy. Julie, take a rabbit by the hair. Oh, my gosh. Roe, Jimmy, Roe. And then they broke into The Deal, and The Deal on that night. Whoa.
Yeah.
You and me better spend some time wondering what we choose. Yeah, and then The Morning Dew. I mean, they just keep bringing it every night, and they can do it wherever. You know, don't ever assume that it's just simple. I mean, we've gone through all the people that go and make all this possible for us to come and enjoy a night like no other. To be able to duplicate perfection on command. I mean, that, the amount of effort it goes into it. I mean, all these different people, and we just cannot ever thank them enough for their sacrifice, for their discipline, for their honor, for their sense of professionalism, for their willingness to just put it out there, and then to go and literally collapse at the end when it's all over, and then have to go to bed, get up, move the whole thing up to the Gorge, and then, because those people in the Northwest, man, they are going to be ready to go.
If you're wondering how we got here, or even what the question was, I don't have an answer for you. Now back to Bill.
Laurie and I will be there. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. Because last night when we were just coming out of Standing on the Moon and U.S. Blues, what are they going to play? And then they come out with, we're going to leave this broke-down palace. Fare thee well. Fare thee well. Listen to the music. Sing sweet songs to rock my soul. Stugatz, I will see you on tour. Here we go. I'm going to tell you how it's going to be. Don't ease me. And I used to be a lost sailor. Now I'm a tiger in a trance, a state of circumstance. dance. I'm playing in the band and trying to watch myself on Shakedown Street. It hurts me too, yes, but the black-throated wind, we hope it stays away. Casey Jones, watch your speed out there. Bertha, don't you come around here anymore. We're going to try our best, Stu Goss, to avoid all the cold rain and snow, but as long as they want to sing the song and get up there, back that up with Helena Bucket, at least I've enjoyed the ride on the day that I was born, Jack Straw. When you get confused, listen to the music play. We used to play for silver, now we play for life. Here we go, trying to get away, ramble on Rose. I am ready.
I love you.
Much love, eternal gratitude. We will see you on tour.
Okay, Bill, I don't think there's any better way to end that. That was fantastic. I don't think I asked a single question, and I don't care. He just hung up on me. I mean, how about that? Stanzik, what just happened? Stanzik.
He did just hang up.
Stanzik, you keep all of that in there.
Oh, my God.
Let's just talk it out on the air here.
Stupidity.
All right, Stanzik was right. He was definitely on LSD.
Are you serious? I thought he was straight. I thought I owed you.
Stupidity. Stanzik, I didn't get a fucking question in. I didn't even get the introduction in. He just cut me off and he just ran with it, man.
I mean, that's got to be the ideal interview for you. I know I said that about the CJ McCollum interview, but this one definitely is, because you didn't have to do any actual work. You just said hi and he took it and ran.
I know, but here's the thing. I actually did work for this. And you know I did, because you know how excited I was to talk to Bill Walton, the world's most famous deadhead. His nickname is Grateful Red, or the Big Red Deadhead. He's on tour with the band. He's friends with the band. And so for this interview, maybe not CJ, but this interview, you know I had a litany of questions to ask him. You know how excited I was for this, Danzig.
What questions did you actually have prepared?
All right. That's a good question by you. How about that?
Are you scrambling right now because you didn't have any?
No, I have them right in front of me. I'm just trying to find the email, but I do have them right here. You ready?
Yep.
I mean, the obvious questions of how'd you get into the Dead and all that, take us to your first show, and I figured there'd be a conversation there. He'd tell me about his first show, I'd tell him about my show. Stanzik, he played drums with the band in f***ing Egypt in like 1978. He played drums.
Come on.
Yeah, I wanted to ask him about it. Yes. He played drums in Egypt in front of pyramids. And I'm certain he was totally sober. I didn't get to ask him.
What else did you have?
I had, if the Dead were a basketball, this is a good question. If the Dead were a basketball team, who in the Dead would play what position? That's such a good question. I didn't get to ask him.
So like John Mayer at point guard?
Right. Well, I went back to the Dead of the 80s and 90s. So the original Grateful Dead, it was Mickey, it was Bill, it was Phil, Jerry Garcia, Bobby Weir, and a guy called Pigpen. Pigpen played the keyboard. He passed away. Brett Midland, I believe, replaced him. So this is back in like the 80s, okay?
Gotcha.
80s, 90s, Grateful Dead. And so for me, the point guard, man, this is tough. The point guard would probably be a Jerry Garcia, because he just directed traffic. He did everything. And then I would probably have Bobby as the two guard, and then I'd go Phil as the small forward, and Bill and Mickey, the drummers, they'd probably be the four and the five, and then Brett Midland, a keyboardist who was literally off to the side. He'd be coming off the bench, okay?
Okay.
But I wanted to ask Walton that, man. I'm very upset. Coolest person Bill Walton's ever seen a Dead show live with. I wanted to ask him that. It will be me in Colorado in July. That will be his answer forevermore. That's going to be my answer. You know that, right?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
going to be, well, yeah, he's going to surpass George R.R. Martin.
Definitely.
And then, you know, he addressed the top five places to see a Dead show. I wanted to ask him, person we wouldn't expect seeing at a Dead show that Bill Walton has seen at a Dead show. Does that sound weird to you? Or is that a good question? Because I'm telling you, like, you'll go to a Dead show and then all of a sudden there's Al Franken.
Right. Like, we had Kirk Goldsberry on and you didn't know before we interviewed him that he's a big Deadhead. You're like, whoa.
Correct.
I mean, not that many people know who Goldsberry is, but I'm sure there's a ton of people where Walton's looked over and been like, oh my God, what's this person doing here?
And now it just dawned on me, I have quite the conundrum, because I already committed to go to a Dead show with Goldsberry in Colorado, and Bill Walton just invited me to a Dead show in Colorado. So do me a favor, okay? I ain't going to do it. You do it, tell Goldsberry to go f*** himself, okay? Stupidity! And then I had one last question for him, Stanzik. Like, I had one last question I wanted to ask him about. If this was your final Dead show, I give you an 8-song opening set, 10-song second set. Give me your dream dead show. He wouldn't answer that, though, right? He'd still be talking, correct?
Yeah, so you would have asked him that question, and he would have filled up about 8 hours of tape.
It's like asking me top five quarterbacks of all time, and I give you 50 quarterbacks, right?
A little bonus one, though. Oh, yeah, everybody likes the bonus ones.
Everyone loves the bonus one. And then I wanted to ask him, I mean, God, he played drums in Egypt with the band. But forget about that. I need to move past that. I wanted to ask him your best John Wooden story, because I read that the three most important people of Bill's life, John Wooden, Larry Bird, and Jerry Garcia.
Love
it. So I wanted to ask your best Wooden story, your best Larry Bird story, your best Jerry story. That's it.
That's good. I mean, you did some prep. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I mean, how do you think that quote, if indeed I am quoting him accurately, how do you think that made Luke feel? Stupidity. All right, what a really fun episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Two great guests, CJ McCollum, super interesting dude, great basketball player, and Bill Walton. Also a great basketball player and a super interesting dude. How about that? We had two of those on today, Stanzik.
Pretty good, man. I'm still rattled from the Walton interview. I don't know what happened.
So am I. I mean, listen, CJ McCollum, probably a better basketball player, only because Bill Walton was shortened by injury, right? Everyone agrees Bill Walton would have been one of the all-time greats had he remained healthy. So I'll give McCollum the edge in terms of being a basketball player just because he doesn't have the injuries. In terms of being interesting as CJ was, there is no one on the face of this planet more interesting than Bill Walton.
I think I disagree with you on the NBA career standpoint. I think Walton still has CJ McCollum. He was a better basketball player.
And he's got two rings.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
All right, so Walton, not only a bet. CJ, apologies to you. You are fantastic. You were fantastic. We're going to have you on again. Bill Walton was both the better basketball player and more interesting person.
But CJ does use butt wipes, so we're good there.
Yes, he talked about dropping deuces on a f***ing airplane. Oh, my God, this is the greatest episode we've ever done. Subscribe, rate, and review, then unsubscribe, resubscribe, re-rate, re-review. I got a very exciting announcement for you. Stanzik, you would agree that the Weekend Observations crew, the podcast we did a few weeks ago with Mikey C., Mike Golick Jr., Mikey A., went over very, very well, both externally with the audience and internally with the people who run our company, correct?
Yes, rave reviews. We got some messages from some bosses that were very impressed with what we did there.
All right, well, I got great news for the audience and those bosses. Weekend Observations is coming back for a second reunion, a second episode. Me, Mike Golick Jr., Mikey A., Stanzik will join us as well, of course, and the star of the show, Mikey C., that is coming at you next week. Weekend Observations next week under the Stupidity umbrella. I cannot wait for that. As good as I think that's going to be, it will never eclipse what we just did with Bill Walton.